Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The United States Postal Service has announced plans to end letter mail delivery on Saturdays. At a press conference last month in Washington, D.C., Postmaster General Patrick R. Donahoe announced the new five-day letter delivery schedule.
Since 2008, we've seen a steady decline in the use of first-class mail. It's our most profitable product and generates the most revenue. But people pay their bills online. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. You cannot beat free.
Joining us to talk about the Postal Service's problems is Rich Geddes. He's a Cornell University professor and author of Saving the Mail, How to Solve the Problems of the U.S. Postal Service. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for inviting me, Ann.
We were talking earlier. You actually wrote your book in 2003. So apparently the Postal Service is still struggling. And I was wondering, have the problems changed much in the last decade?
Well, I think the problems have become more severe in the past decade, Ann. Folks in my little postal policy community have been predicting this type of a threat to the Postal Service since the mid-90s, as soon as electronic communications became more ubiquitous. You just heard Postmaster General Donahoe talk about folks paying bills online, doing more banking online. The whole electronic communications revolution has been expected to cut into Postal Service letter mail volumes for a long time. I think what we're seeing now, Ann, is the manifestation of that. So we're seeing that people actually are comfortable, particularly young people, doing a whole lot of activities online such that they don't send that letter with a stamp on it any longer. So we're finally seeing, I think, push is coming to shove in some sense for the Postal Service, and it's accelerating in the sense that the declines in first-class mail in the most recent years have been the most severe. So we are, I think, experiencing what people have expected, so the nature of the threat hasn't really changed, but the magnitude of it probably has.
My guest is Rich Geddes. He's professor of policy analysis and management at Cornell University. He's also the author of Saving the Mail, How to Solve the Problems of the U.S. Postal Service. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment for Rich Geddes, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'd love to hear from Postal Service workers. And get your point of view. We'll be hearing from the Ohio Union end of the equation later on in the program. So first-class mail is its most profitable still, but they want to cut that out on Saturdays. What's the equation here that maybe some people might be missing?
Well, that's a good point, Ann. And in fact, it is the most profitable, as the Postmaster General said. But just to put some numbers on that. The Postal Service makes about three times the amount of profit on each piece of first-class mail that it makes off each piece of standard mail. So keep in mind that the reason for the Postal Service's structure as this part of government with, in fact, two monopolies, by that I mean legally enforced monopolies, one over the delivery of a letter, the other over the use of the mailbox, is to guarantee the delivery of letter mail. So it's not about boxes, it's not about overnight, it's not about catalogs. It's really about the first-class letter that has been a standard form of communications in this country for centuries. And it is odd that they would cut out the Saturday delivery of letter mail. Keep in mind that they will continue with the parcel delivery on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm.
So it's only, and I believe, standard mail, which is what most people think of as advertising material and catalog and things, credit card ads,
okay,
things like that, will I believe, continue. So some folks are sort of wondering about that, but you have to realize that the Postmaster General really has his back up against the wall because the Postal Service is very constrained in how it can use its distribution network, which is extensive, to raise more revenue, to get into new products, maybe new types of service offerings, et cetera. Basically, all he can do in response to the big drop in first-class mail that we've seen is cut costs. And the Postal Service thinks it'll save about $2 billion a year by reducing that delivery on Saturdays. So I think that's, you know, that's the thinking behind it, is they're looking for ways to, anyway, almost to cut costs, because really, under the current law, Ann, that's about all they can do.
Why are they so constrained? What about the law constrains them?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, the way that Congress, when it set up the Postal Service in 1970, hopefully some listeners remember, it used to be the Post Office.
Mm-hmm.
Before 1970, we always called it the Post Office, and it was just part of government. It received an annual direct subsidy from Congress. The 1970 Postal Reorganization Act created what we think of as the modern Postal Service. It went into operation in July of 71, and it's been pretty successful since then. The idea was to give that Postal Service a monopoly over the delivery of letters, just letters, not boxes or anything else, and use the profits that it made from that monopoly to help pay for delivery on rural routes that we think are not profitable. So we call that in the business a cross-subsidy. In mm-hmm. other words, it was subsidizing those rural money-losing routes with the monopoly profits from routes that did make money. But the problem is, when you give a legally enforced monopoly like that in, you have to have oversight. You can't just say, you have a monopoly and go for it. In other words, the Postal Service is really constrained in new business activities because it has this monopoly, and I mean, again, a legally enforced monopoly structure over the delivery of letters. So they go hand in glove, and when you give the monopoly, you have to have the regulatory oversight. So the Postal Service is really quite constrained in how it can go after new revenue.
And the monopoly was given to the Postal Service so that the government would no longer have to subsidize the operation.
That was the idea.
Mm-hmm.
That was the idea, is that it's – and this is actually a key issue that is relevant for the debate now.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the 1970 Act was that all rates and fees from delivering – mainly from delivering mail were to cover – the total costs of postal operations. And that's called the break-even requirement in the 1970 Act. And a lot of folks think that was a very good thing relative to the old system. It made the Postal Service more like a regular business, which does, of course, have to break even over time or it goes bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think the structure of that was probably a pretty solid move forward. But now it appears that model that was set up in 1970 just cannot withstand the decline in letter mail and the, you know, the concomitant decline in revenues that we've seen. So they really need a new structure, Ann.
Last month, legislation was introduced to modernize the Postal Service. And before we get to that, there was also legislation introduced to repeal the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act of 2006. Given what I know about it, that act seems to fly in the face of enabling the Postal Service to make enough revenue to break even.
Well, I think that act was a good act. The consensus is it was about 10 years too late.
Well, tell us what it does and why you think it was 10 years too late.
Well, I think the main concern that act tried to address was the worry that the Postal Service would use these profits, monopoly profits from the delivery of letters, to unfairly compete in those types of markets where it does face competition. Keep in mind, in package and parcel delivery, it competes with United Parcel Service, FedEx, and other delivery companies. So
mm-hmm.
those are not monopolized activities.
Mm-hmm.
The fear in the old days, Ann, was that it would have these monopoly profits in letter mail so that it could sort of unfairly lower prices in those competitive businesses, including overnight services. But, of course, we've seen the monopoly profits from letter mail go away
mm-hmm.
so quickly because folks are shifting into electronic communications that is really no longer a major concern. Obviously, the concern now is just how can we give the Postal Service a viable business model that will allow it to operate in the new communications marketplace. And so the other thing, of course, with the 2006 Act that has become a big bone of contention, and it's a little arcane, but it's it required the Postal Service to prepay its retirees' health care costs. In other words, there was a team of actuaries at the Office of Personnel Management in the federal government that determined that a true cost under the 1970 Act for the Postal Service was funding these, at that time, unfunded liabilities for its retirees. But what happened in the process, Ann, was this 10-year budget window that is standard for what's called scoring bills or figuring out how much they're going to cost, sort of caused Congress to have the Postal Service front-load those payments. So they work out to about $5.4 or $5.5 billion a year. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. That's a big payment for an entity that is facing declining demand. So the 2006 Act, I think, had some good aspects to it, but it really was not suited for addressing the changes in communications that we're seeing now.
Some people say that it's at the heart of what the economic difficulties are for the Postal Service. But what do you make of that? I mean, is it something that should be repealed in your opinion, or is that debatable?
Well, no. I think that the folks who decided at the Office of Personnel Management that these were true costs of the Postal Service were, and the costs are not going to go away. And these are costs that the Postal Service has incurred mm-hmm. through its operation. It's keep in mind that postal workers are federal employees, just like military. Taxpayers, have those liabilities mm-hmm. to be in the future. They're not going to go away. They're either going to be paid by the Postal Service or paid by the taxpayer. And the 2006 Act determined that those should be paid as much as possible by the mailers, right, through rates, through the Postal Service. And I think that's right. But I think that what happened was those payments got pushed too much into the present. It would be, sensible, I think, to stretch those payments out a little bit. Uh-huh. But really, I want to keep the eye on the ball here, Ann. And the ball here is the declining demand for letter mail, because that's the fundamental economic shift that is causing all this concern about the Postal Service. The Postal Service would be fine if the demand for letter mail were growing mm-hmm. every year, but it's declining at a frightening rate.
It's declining at a frightening rate, and they don't have the flexibility to create other sources of income.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So we need a new law.
My guest is Rick Geddes. He is the author of Saving the Mail, How to Solve the Problems of the U.S. Postal Service. He wrote that 10 years ago. So I guess they didn't read your book close enough, and we're still talking about it. The U.S. Postal Service is planning to eliminate Saturday first-class letter mail delivery by August. Of course, there's a few hurdles before then. We'll talk about those. Coming up, we're going to hear from the U.S. Postal Service. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman to serve on the Supreme Court. When she graduated from law school in 1952, she called at least 40 law firms.
And not one of them would give me an interview. I was a woman, and they said, we don't hire women.
Justice O'Connor has a new book called Out of Order. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. This is 89.7 NPR News. There is a slight chance of a rain-snow mix today. Rain is more likely, and a high of 38 degrees. And then becoming all snow overnight tonight, a snow accumulation of 2 to 4 inches is possible, a low of 28 degrees. Support comes from the Homeport Nobo on Long Condominiums, offering home ownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring a diverse community with a mix of historic and newly built homes and condos. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. Still with us is Rick Geddes. He's a Cornell University professor and author of Saving the Mail, How to Solve the Problems of the U.S. Postal Service. Joining us now from Cleveland to talk about plans by the U.S. Postal Service to end first-class mail delivery, first-class letter delivery on Saturdays is David Van Allen. He's a spokesman for the United States Postal Service. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, good morning.
The Postmaster General at the press conference last month said that the downslide started in 2008. That's 5 years ago. Why the lag time in reacting to the problem in this way?
Well, on February 17th, 2012, the Postal Service did announce a comprehensive five-year business plan to reduce the gap between revenue and expenses by $22.5 billion in 2016. But a substantial portion of this plan requires swift, comprehensive, and meaningful legislation by the Congress. Postal Service is currently in the process of updating the plan, and details urgently needed for legislation action by the Congress in key areas are requiring the USPS health care plan, which would resolve our RHB prepayment issue, refund the FERS overpayment, streamline the governance model, authority to expand products and services, required defined contribution system for future postal employees, instructions to an arbitrator when we're dealing with our labor unions, reform workers' compensation, and a right to appeal EEOC class action decisions to federal court. We're also proposing to move to a six-day package and five-day mail delivery schedule, which could bring savings approximately $2 billion. Now, you know, over the past decade, you asked about why so long, the USPS has worked tirelessly to improve every aspect of the operations under our control. This includes reducing work hours by 28% while delivering to almost 14 million more addresses since 2001. We also continue to pursue changes in our mailing processing delivery network, modifications in service standards, and transportation savings. These cost savings measures take place in concert with an intense focus on developing and introducing new and innovative products and services. But these efforts just aren't enough to bridge the gap, the substantial gap between revenue expenses.
Last month, legislation was introduced to modernize the Postal Service. Is that what you're talking about, that legislation?
Last month, legislation was introduced?
Yes.
No, I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about.
What about the legislation to repeal the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act of 2006?
Yeah, that's something we are looking for to be resolved. That does make a huge contribution to our net loss. Last fiscal year, we ended at $15.9 billion less net loss, and that was driven by about $13.4 billion in expenses that's really outside our control in the short term. That includes that $11.1 billion retiree health benefits prefunding and some expenses related to long-term portion of workers' compensation.
If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. Joining us from Cleveland, David Van Allen. He's a spokesman for the United States Postal Service. Critics of the plan, David, say that it will only further reduce revenue by decreasing mail volume overall. It's the most profitable, as the Postmaster General said. The first-class mail is the most profitable, generates the most revenue for the service. Is there a point of diminishing returns with this? Is there a concern that it might not be the right move?
Well, we developed this approach by working with our customers to understand their delivery needs and by identifying creative ways to generate significant cost savings. By maintaining the six-day package delivery schedule, the primary concerns that customers related about switching to five-day mail delivery really have been addressed in surveys conducted just last month and even prior to that, the last most recent one. Roughly 80% of all respondents supported us going to a five-day mail delivery, six-day package delivery, and that support rose to 85% from the respondents if they asked they thought the new delivery schedule would help stabilize the financial situation of the Postal Service. And that's pretty well across the board. Support was higher in urban and suburban areas, but even in the rural areas, we're looking at 76%. And if you're looking at other surveys, they average from 63% to 80% in support of this move. Saturday is typically our lowest mail delivery day, and primarily because of businesses that are closed. A lot of businesses just simply do not get delivery of mail on Saturday already, and they'll get their mail the next business day.
Ed in Columbus, you're on the air with Rut Geddes, author of Saving the Mail, How to Solve the Problems of the U.S. Postal Service, and also David Van Allen, spokesman for the United States Postal Service Corporate Communications. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I'm a letter carrier. I work in Columbus, and I have lots of problems with the legislation that was passed in 2006 and also what the Postmaster General has proposed. You know, that legislation in 2006 proposes that we pre-fund out for a 75-year period. So basically what we're doing is pre-funding benefits for people that haven't even been hired yet in many cases. And there's a second fund that hasn't been mentioned yet that the Inspector General of the Postal Service and some others have said that the Postal Service has overpaid something like $13 billion into that one. Our current fund that your guests were originally talking about has already got $40 billion in it, which means it's pre-funded for quite a few years. And if they just eliminate that and pay us back what we already have overpaid in the I might be mistaken. I think it's a workers' compensation fund, but I may be mistaken. But as far as the five-day delivery goes, we have letter carriers generally in most areas work on a rotating day-off basis. Mm-hmm. And we have for years been told, you know, save your sick leave, save your annual leave. If you've got a doctor's appointment, if you've got something major, try to see if you can't schedule it for your day off. You're talking about much more problems on the workroom floor when you have people that say, I've got a doctor's appointment, I'm not going to be here. That has been a bone of contention all the way down the line as long as I've been in the Postal Service, and I've been here since 1986. Secondarily, when you're looking at the Saturday delivery, you're going to end up moving the regular carriers to Monday through Friday, which means the people that are delivering the packages on the weekends are not going to be as familiar with the routes. They're not going to be as familiar with where people want packages to go. They're probably not going to know whether somebody is on vacation or not, because knowing the supervision that we have in the post office, they're going to tell them, here's the ones I want you to take. Go take them. Go deliver them.
Okay.
And we have that on a day-to-day basis.
David Van Allen, do you want to respond to some of that or break it down a little bit for us in response?
Well, these are definitely changes, but the Postal Service is 237 years old, and the changes that we've undergone successfully over that period of time are just really astronomical. City mail delivery was only first experimentally launched in 1863, and rural free delivery about 30 years later. So that was an experiment that did succeed, and with that success, we found we no longer needed almost 77,000 post offices across the country. Today, we have just a little over 31,000, and during that time, mail was delivered twice a day, 7 days a week. We dropped Sunday delivery in 1912, and in 1950, with the processing improvements, we reduced the need for delivery to just once a day. Now, these are changes, and they're challenging and kind of upsetting to people that are in the jobs right now. But we have reduced our employees significantly over the past few years. I get that number here. And even with this huge, significant reduction in employee base, we haven't had any layoffs of any kind. We've done it all through attrition. We've done it smartly. We've done it gradually. And we've done it in cooperation with our labor unions.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. David Allen, a lot of it seems to come back to when we were talking about dollars and cents is the Postal Accountability and Enhancement Act of 2006 and this mm-hmm. prepayment on the health care costs, going forward 75 years. Ed, the postal worker said that these are people that haven't even been hired yet. I would posit there are people that haven't even been born yet. Why, if everybody knows that that's a problem and doesn't make sense, why does it persist? Why haven't lawmakers stepped up before now to do something about it?
Well, I couldn't speculate on their motivations for it, but
true.
I would agree that we do need to change these things. However, I think it's a misnomer to think that that's the only problem. In fiscal year 2012, total mail volume dropped to 159.9 billion pieces. That's a decrease of 8.4 billion pieces, or approximately 5% compared to the year before.
Mm-hmm.
reflects the continued decline of first-class mail due to the ongoing shift of, you know, communications and transactions to electronic alternatives. So our volume loss to electronic alternatives constitutes a fundamental and permanent reduction in the use of mail services. So we do need to adapt to the way America is using the mail and be more flexible. And that's what we're hoping Congress will grant us, is more flexibility in being able to respond to the very real market demands. Just like any business, they can make decisions quickly. They have flexibility, you know, to work in today's dynamic environment. So we need to be able to implement those decisions just as quickly as any large business.
Could I jump in here for a second, Ann?
Yes, of course, Rick Geddes.
Okay. So I just wanted to second what David said, in the sense that we need legislation that gives the Postal Service much more flexibility. I understand the concerns of the caller, Ed, the letter carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, as I said before, I think those payments should be restructured. You know, they could be stretched out. But I think that should only be done within the context of a law that gives the Postal Service much more commercial flexibility and demonopolizes it at the same time. So keep in mind, Dan, in my view, the United States is behind every other major developed country in terms of reforming its postal services. All 27 member countries of the European Union have eliminated their postal monopolies, as we said, and you need that in order to get that commercial freedom. I want to emphasize that although letter mail volumes are down in the United States, as David has stressed, there's still a lot of mail sent in the United States compared to, say, European countries. And those posts in Europe, in Australia, in New Zealand, and a whole bunch of other countries have shown that they can be successful in the modern electronic marketplace with the correct commercial freedoms. And, of course, in some countries, such as in Germany, they've privatized their posts. They've allowed their post to form alliances. The German Post, Deutsche Post, purchased another company, DHL, a long time ago, and has become an innovative global logistics company. Very successful.
Thank you, Ed, for that call. Let's hear from Don. He wrote a note on Facebook. He says, when I put a stamp on a piece of mail and drop it in my mailbox, I am 100% secure that it will reach its destination in a timely manner. That includes important documents, bill payments, etc. I do not have that trust with any private company, whether it's a utility, telephone company, insurance company, etc. I have come to expect to be disappointed with the products and services they provide. Losing the United States Postal Service, would it be a great loss to our society? I think he means as a public entity. Has privatization brought about that kind of insecurity in any of those countries, Rick Geddes?
Not that I am aware of, Ann. I think that people, as best as I can tell, now keep in mind that demonopolizing, getting rid of the monopoly,
is different. Yeah.
right? From privatizing. So when I say all 27 member countries have gotten rid of their monopolies to get more commercial freedom, they have not all privatized. So, but my understanding is that customer satisfaction in countries that have, Holland, in Germany, remain satisfied with that. There are steps that those posts can take to ensure the sanctity of the mails, retaining those criminal penalties for anyone who tampers with the mail. For example, it's a crime to open up somebody else's mail, you know, without their permission. Retaining those sorts of guarantees, I think, can be done within the context of the reforms we're discussing, Ann.
David Van Allen, Ohio Postal Workers Union and others have said that the Postal Service does not have the power to eliminate the six-day delivery, that you need congressional approval even for this. You've said that it's going to happen in August, but what needs to happen before that'll happen in August?
Well, we believe we have the authority under current law to make this change. If there is any question, the continuing resolution expires March 27th, and we're urging Congress not to take any action to prevent this delivery change.
And what kind of feedback are you getting from Congress regarding this? They've said they want to schedule hearings, but as far as I could tell, there weren't any yet.
Yeah, well, I don't.
Like I said, I couldn't speculate on that, but I do know that the American people are supportive overwhelmingly. As I said, 80% in our most recent survey, and prior to that, at the minimum, 63% in favor. especially when we continue to do the parcels on Saturdays, which is the biggest concern. I would like to comment on the Facebook posting, though, and appreciate that because Penelman Institute and its most trusted companies for privacy study, mm-hmm. They ranked the Postal Service as the fourth most trusted company. And the same survey also named the Postal Service most trusted government agency for the seventh year in a row. So people do trust the Postal Service. We take a lot of pride in what we do. And even the carrier that called in, I appreciate his call because our employees take a tremendous amount of pride in what we do, and we try to satisfy the American public to the best of our ability every single day.
Roger in Cincinnati, you're a retired postal worker. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I want to put this mute on the. How do you do this? I'm going to mute this thing here.
So okay.
Okay, I think I did it. Yeah, I've been gone about eight years. I just remember that I've been told, you know, that the Postal Service is not supposed to make a profit or a loss, even as it is today. It is supposed to, over the period, and I think that was mentioned, over a period of time, it's supposed to break even. But I've also been told that the Postal Service, on the years that it makes money, the federal government takes it, like we've heard about Social Security, to take the money that the Postal Service has made. And the other years, they complain about the fact that the Postal Service can't make money.
Well, that's interesting. David Van Allen, is that your understanding?
My understanding is that since the 2006 law, actually we're allowed to bank that money, any excess, and use it to pay for future deficits that might come up. So that may have been something like that in the past, but it hasn't been since 2006.
Okay. Roger, thanks a lot for that call. Sabrina in New Philadelphia, you're on the air. Welcome. Hi, Sabrina. Hi, Sabrina. Okay, not there. Sorry for that. Well, I guess it's a good time to say thanks and goodbye to David Van Allen, then spokesman for the United States Postal Service Corporate Communications. Thank you, David, for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
We'll continue our conversation in just a minute. Rick Geddes, author of Saving the Mail, How to Solve the Problems of the U.S. Postal Service, will remain with us. And coming up, Terry Grant, president of the Ohio Postal Workers Union. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Jane Clayson. Coming up on the next On Point, more refugees pouring out of Syria, more promises of aid for the rebels, and more fears that the radicals will win this fight. We take stock. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
And On Point begins later this afternoon at 1 here on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here in 20 minutes. At 11 o'clock, Tech Tuesday begins. And Thursday night, the Tenors visit the WOSU TV studios to discuss their dazzling new show. Enjoy music from their newly released album, Lead With Your Heart. The show combines classic songs, modern tunes, and world music. Watch the Tenors Lead With Your Heart. It's Thursday night at 8 on WOSU TV. Expect a rain-snow mix for today and a high of 38 degrees. Snow for tonight with 2 to 4 inches possible. Support comes from the Thurber House, presenting author Nathan Englander, reading from his latest work, What We Talk About When We Talk About Anne Frank, giving its readers an array of emotions from anguish to tender humor, Thursday evening, March 7th at the Columbus Museum of Art. Tickets and more details at thurberhouse.org. And support comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, Tony Award-winning singer Debbie Gravatt, and the CJO perform a night of classic show tunes with a jazzy twist in the program, Big Band on Broadway, Thursday, March 14th through Sunday the 17th at the Southern Theater. Details and tickets at jazzartsgroup.org. All Sides continues. This is 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about the United States Postal Service's plans to eliminate first-class letter delivery on Saturdays. Package delivery would continue. Letter delivery would end. Bring us to a five-day-a-week letter delivery in the United States. Still with us is Rick Geddes. He's a Cornell University professor and author of Saving the Mail, How to Solve the Problems of the U.S. Postal Service. Joining us now from Canton is Terry Grant. He's president of the Ohio Postal Workers Union. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Good morning, and thank you for the invitation.
Your organization opposes reducing letter delivery to 5 days. What do you believe the outcome would be with such a plan?
Well, I personally and our organization thinks that it would be a terrible blow to the Postal Service. It would further reduce volume and restrict access from the public to the Postal Service.
Why would it reduce volume? I mean, people would still mail as many letters, right? They just wouldn't get delivered on as many days.
Well, I think it gives people another opportunity to do something than other than mail a letter. The Postal Service is a consumer-driven business and relies on that business solely for its existence. It receives no tax dollars and it exists solely on the revenue generated. And if you have a business that exists in that manner and then you eliminate one day of that business, I think it's reasonable to expect that not only volume would decline, but revenue would decline also. And
Terry, let me ask you something, and it might sound a little crazy, but conversely, or if you look at the other side of the equation, what if we added a day? What if we started having mail delivered on Sunday? Would that expand the revenue?
Well, I mean, there was a time when mail was delivered every day of the week, and if you go back far enough, in some places it was delivered twice a day. I would think that it would, stand to reason that you would, if you increase the access to your business, it should increase the amount of business you receive as long as you are able to operate in an efficient manner.
Rick Geddes, I don't know if you can respond to this or not, but we have an email from Beth in Clintonville, and perhaps, Terry Grant, you could. She asks, why are they planning on ending Saturday delivery when studies have shown that Tuesdays are the lightest mail days, since businesses don't have mail pickup on weekends?
So, this is all getting to a much larger point that I would like to stress that I think is underappreciated in the discussion of what should we get rid of Saturday, should we add Sunday, what's the effect of that going to be? It's very difficult for us to discuss on the radio and know the right answer because it's going to vary across locations, across routes, across regions. And what I think we're folks like David Van Allen and myself and others want when we're talking about legislation that would free the Postal Service up would be to experiment with different service offerings in a way that could use its existing delivery network to raise more revenue. So Terry just mentioned that, it's a commercial business. They respond to customers. That's exactly right. What we're trying to do is to urge Congress to give it the commercial freedom to make that a reality. In other words, to allow it to say, well, maybe some routes would be best served 3 times a week. Maybe other routes would be best served 7 times a week. Under the current law, though, Ann, they're just not free to, and maybe both of those would be revenue maximizing, right? Mm-hmm. Depending, and maybe suppose a Walmart moves into a new neighborhood, and it wants to alert everybody in the neighborhood about the great sale, the great prices that it has, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It may want to blanket that neighborhood 7 days a week for a while with information about the new store. So that type of variability instead of this one-size-fits-all type of an approach is what will get the most revenue out of its existing assets. And I think those assets are extremely valuable. The Postal Service does an amazing job of delivering to every address 6 days a week under the 1970 Act. And I think that's a tremendous thing. What we want to do is to be able to take that concept of using that network most effectively to the next level. But I think we're kind of getting off on a tangent, if you will, if we're talking about, oh, should we do 7 days, should we do 6 days? We really need to give the Postal Service the flexibility to make those decisions, but subject to a minimum. In other words, Congress needs to decide in the new electronic marketplace what's the minimum level of guaranteed service we need now that we have the internet and phone and fax and texting, et cetera, you know, and then let the Postal Service go from there.
Terry Grant, what about that idea of flexibility and be able to respond in a more timely manner? I asked the fellow from the United States Postal Service, the spokesperson, David Van Allen, you know, why it took 5 years to get to this point. What about more flexibility?
Well, I think that the Postal Service should have more flexibility, not only in a delivery situation, but in allowing the products that they have to be able to expand in that area. They're severely restricted to what they can offer. Basically, they're just limited to, you know, sales and revenue generated from mail or mail-related.
The stamps, the fly, yeah. the envelopes, and that sort of thing.
You know, they can't do anything else because the law prevents it. And as far as the one situation fits all concept, you know, the Postal Service is provided for in the Constitution of the United States, and basically, what it means is that it's universal service at uniform rates. So that means, whether you live at the North Pole or you live in Key West, Florida, you are offered the same service and you pay the same rate as anybody else.
But Rick Geddes, you're saying that's one of the problems.
No, I mean, the constitutional provision for Congress to provide post offices and post roads, I think it's Article 1, Section 8, is not the problem. I mean, that's
uniformity issue.
Yeah, that clause of the Constitution does not imply 6 day a week delivery. What I think Congress needs to do is to reassess that responsibility in light of technology. And do we need 6 day a week delivery, you know, to essentially all addresses given the communications revolution? And if maybe Congress says yes, we do, but then Congress needs to figure out a better way of meeting that obligation than asking the Postal Service to do the impossible, which is to continue to break even while providing, you know, 6 day a week delivery in the face of declining revenue.
Samantha in Columbus, you're on the air. Go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Hi, and I'm calling because I want to know if we want to notify our legislators that we would like a change in this law and to give the Postal Services better opportunity to expand what they're doing and make a profit, allow them to make a profit. To whom do we write?
Your lawmaker? I mean,
yeah.
Terry.
Well, I mean, what? How do I refer to it?
Uh-huh.
What am I saying to them? What law do I want them to change?
Okay. Rick
yes.
Geddes, you want to take a swat at that?
Sure. We want them to change Title 39 of the United States Code.
Okay.
Thank you.
Title 39. Sorry about that, Ann. But
no,
it's all governed. Go to Google.
Terry Grant, do you
it's
agree?
Title 39 of the United States Code. We need a big change in Title 39.
Terry Grant?
Wonderful.
From the Ohio Postal Workers Union, do you agree with that?
Well, actually, there has been legislation introduced into both of the House and the Senate that would solve the problems of the Postal Service and provide them with the opportunity to offer different kinds of goods and services. It was introduced earlier this month in both the House and the Senate, and it's called the Postal Service Protection Act. And it's our opinion that the if this legislation would pass, it would end the Postal Service's financial problems and, again, offer them the opportunity to expand on their products and services.
How so? What's the – I actually mentioned that there would been legislation introduced earlier, but the David Van Allen acted like he said he didn't know what I was talking about.
The bill in the Senate is Senate Bill 316. The bill in the House is H.R. 630. They're basically identical pieces of legislation.
Right.
And they would fix the immediate financial crisis by ending that mandate from the 2006...
The prepayment of the health care.
Exactly.
Okay.
It would also allow the Postal Service to recover the overpayments that have been made into the federal pensions, civil service, and the FERS, which has been estimated anywhere from 8 to 20-some billion dollars.
Okay. What about, would it change how the Postal Service operates?
Yeah, it would reestablish the overnight delivery standards for first class mail, which would ensure the delivery of the mail. It would help keep the processing mail processing facilities open, and it would protect jobs. It would also protect the 6-day delivery of the mail, and it would allow the Postal Service to develop new products and services that hopefully would generate new revenue. And there's also language in that bill to protect rural post offices from being closed without first a review by the Postal Regulatory Commission. So, you know, that if this legislation would be enacted, I think it would solve the problems. We wouldn't be discussing the future of the Postal Service because it would be in a much more solvent position.
Rick Geddes?
Yeah, well, I as I mentioned, Ann, I would applaud some of the things that Terry's talking about are in those bills. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to sit down and actually read the language. Maybe Terry knows. But as I've tried to stress, a key reform in giving the Postal Service that commercial flexibility is demonopolizing, right? Getting rid of those legal monopolies. I'm not sure to what degree either the Senate or the House bill would do what all 27 countries in the European Union have already
and
done.
I wanted to
but
get,
they need that.
I wanted to get back to something you mentioned earlier about the Walmart example. What you're saying is give Walmart access to our mailboxes.
Well, I mean, Walmart, no, it would be through the Postal Service.
Okay.
In other
words,
I'm saying Walmart, I'm not saying Walmart would do it directly. I'm saying Walmart would hire the Postal Service.
Gotcha.
By mailing stuff the way we usually mail stuff through the Postal Service.
Okay.
I'm just saying that the Postal Service needs to be freed up to better meet demand that varies across neighborhoods and across time and everything else.
And meaning that Walmart might want it 7 days a week for a couple months,
exactly.
For example.
And it would be willing to pay the Postal Service because keep in mind, Ann, this is an extremely valuable asset, as Terry has mentioned, is this what they call the last mile of delivery, the ability to get a physical item to every single address in an area reliably. And that's as well as the trade name Postal Service, that last mile of delivery is an extremely valuable asset. We just need to use that asset better.
And sure. if I could make a comment about the 27 countries that Professor Geddes has been talking about, you add the mail volume of all those 27 countries together, and it's still not as much as the mail volume that the United States Postal Service delivers. The Postal Service delivers over 40% of the mail volume in the entire world. So, you know, I think it's kind of unfair to compare United States Postal Service with the Postal Service in Holland or Germany or places like that, because they have nowhere near the size or the volume that the United States Postal Service does.
But Terry, my point is that the U.S. Postal Service, you're right, we have more mail per capita than they have in Europe, but that means our U.S. Postal Service can be even more commercially viable than those services in Europe. In other words, we have a valuable system here. People, businesses still mail stuff even though volumes are down. But in a freed up commercial environment, I think our Postal Service could do quite well.
Well, I'm a believer in universal service at uniform rates, and I think that I wasn't able to catch the entire program before I came on, and I know there was a discussion about mail security and things like that, but I think the Postal Service has existed for as long as it has because it does a really excellent job and provides a service to the citizens of this country that's unequaled anywhere else in the world. I mean, it has an infrastructure where it can reach every single address in this country, and
right.
Not only do we deliver the mail, we also deliver about 30% of the business of FedEx and UPS. About 30% of the packages are delivered by the Postal Service.
And then, of course, we can't forget those stories of the mail carrier noticing somebody's mail piling up and saving their life or something like that. It's a big part of our everyday existence, and I guess this means this conversation will continue on into the future. I want to thank my guest today for joining us, Rick Geddes. Couldn't have done it without you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ann.
Rick Geddes is a professor at Cornell University and the author of Saving the Mail, How to Solve the Problems of the U.S. Postal Service. And Terry Grant, thanks so much for joining us today, Terry.
Thank you.
Terry Grant is the president of the Ohio Postal Workers Union. Thanks to everybody for your calls and your emails. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get to them, but I will say an email from Kelly: affixing a first-class stamp to an envelope commands the Postal Service to deliver that parcel in a timely manner. Said parcel can travel in excess of 3,000 miles. Where can anyone locate such an amazing value in terms of money spent versus the service received? Thanks a lot for that email and the others. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.